Hello, and welcome to Barks Remarks, the podcast where we talk about the stories from the legendary Carl Barks, creator of Scrooge McDuck and writer and artist of the greatest Donald and Scrooge comics of all time. Join us as we explore his longer adventure stories in their chronological publishing order. We'll talk about what makes them so enduring, their historical context, and how well they hold up today. So get out your reprint and get ready to enjoy our remarks.
Welcome back to Barks Remarks. I'm Mark Severino, a grown man who loves duck comics and loves to chat about the stories of Carl Barks. It's been a while since I've recorded one of these. I've been kind of reduced the rate, you might have noticed, but I am still fully intending to see this project through to its end. And, you know, we're into the early 60s now, so we're actually not all that far away. We're at kind of some of the later stories, and they're definitely not as good as some of his classic ones, but they're still really interesting to talk about. And I'm very excited. I would say I'm disproportionately excited to talk about our story today, which is the case of the Sticky Money. But before we launch into the story itself, I am thrilled to welcome back a returning guest. I have got Jeffrey Moses, who goes by GOX on the fine interwebs. Welcome back to you, Jeff.
Thanks. Great to be here, Mark.
I really appreciate you joining me. We were chatting. We're recording this on Super Bowl Sunday of all days, but plenty of time to still get your football on if that's what you want to
no
do
worries.
Later.
Yes.
So what do you think, Jeff? The case of the sticky money, it's not a very sticky story, right? It's not one of his more famous stories by a long stretch.
Not one you sort of, well, maybe you do, I don't know, but you don't see it reprinted, or you don't sort of think about it as much as you do a lot of the sort of big old classics. Sort of feels just a little bit marginal to me.
Yeah, I'd say that's right. And you run one of probably the websites that has been around for quite a while, and it's one of the like larger footprint websites that covers the Disney comics. I don't believe that when I checked on your fine blog, the Duck Comics Review, I don't believe you have an entry up for this one, right?
I had not. I'm actually thinking about that for the future, you know, after our chat sometime, you know, not to step on your toes. I mean, maybe sometime a little bit after this, but yeah, I haven't covered this one yet, so it'll be interesting to dive into.
No toe stepping here, by all means. It would be silly not to write about it after spending some time thinking about it, right? So yeah, I always enjoy it. I like hearing your thoughts a lot, of course, in the audio format, but there really is something about reading, sure. You know, after you get to write something. You're a very clever writer, and I know that my own thoughts are sometimes when I get the chance to like put out a feature on these on Facebook, you get to be a little more polished about things.
Sure.
So let's see. Let's cover a little bit of the background of the story.
Sure.
The case of the Sticky Money was published February of 1963 in Uncle Scrooge number 42. You mentioned it doesn't feel like it's been seen as much. That is accurate. You know, it's seen printing in 23 countries in 95 publications overall, according to Index, and only 6 times in the United States. And that is fewer than average, you know, over the course. And I think if I remember right, like the first three reprintings in the U.S., they came kind of quick, right?
Yeah,
like
they were just sort of during the 70s when they just seemed to didn't know what to do, seemingly. So it was just sort of this relentless kind of barrage of sort of the same Barks reprints over and over.
Yeah. I mean, like Barks was so consistent up until like what? Uncle Scrooge number like 60. Or something like that.
Early 60s, yeah.
And then they had to all of a sudden find other people and you kind of
gave up on that at a certain point. So that's just right. Let's do this stuff
so,
again.
You know,
that's in the past. So let's.
Yeah. I'll tell you that, like, the title for me is part of the problem. with this story. It sounds like a Hardy Boys or just some generic kid's book, right? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously money is very Uncle Scrooge, but it just, it doesn't sound as epic in scope or imaginative.
As we'll see. I mean, I still think it's, you know, definitely worth reading, but it does feel like Barks had maybe sort of taken his foot off the gas a little bit by this point. It wasn't, doesn't maybe have the same thematic density as a lot of the earlier stories. Certainly still entertaining, but, you know, definitely a different feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I was actually surprised at how entertaining I found this one. I wouldn't say like it's certainly not one of his best, but I did find it very enjoyable.
Sure.
It is a little bit longer than some of the stories that he's gotten to put out in this span, though. 20 full pages. So
yeah,
definitely longer than I remembered.
Mm-hmm. They are shorter generally, the 60 stories, I guess, due to like Western, the demands of the publishing company and things, I think. For them, or maybe also partially lack of ambition, but I realize I'm babbling about this and I don't know the exact reason, so maybe I should shut up.
That's right. I think they did want him to generally do shorter stories. You know, so before we get into the actual story, I'll tell you that like part of, I barely remember this one, right? And that's to a certain extent, that's just because like I am a product of the stories that I read. Mm-hmm. And during the Gladstone era and the Disney Comics era and Gladstone 2 of the 80s and 90s, when I was heavily reading these, I didn't like, they just didn't reprint this one for a while. And so there was a span where they had gotten around to reprinting all the big ones that where I like kind of dove onto the internet, you know, to check out, well, what are the Barks stories that I missed? This would have been the infancy of the internet. And this, you know, so I would look up in the back issues. So I did, like, I found the old Gold Key reprint of this one, which is where I read it for the first time, but I just didn't go back to it a lot because it wasn't very new or fresh to me, and it just had that sheen of the kind of the cheesy old Gold Key mm-hmm. cover.
Yeah, there was a period when Gemstone was reprinting a bunch of later Barks stories, so that's where I first read it. But yeah, I mean, it didn't. I think I only read it like once, you know, when I first got the book, and then never again till now, revisiting it.
Yeah, and Gemstone is about when I stopped reading. Like, I got a lot of the Gemstones, but not all of them. And Gladstone kind of mixed it up. They reprinted some of the later Daffy or Bark stuff, too.
Sure.
But I just didn't get around to this one. So,
yeah.
All right. So let's do it. We're going to dive on in. And Jeff, I think you looked up a title that interested you for our segment where we pander to the international listener. What's the translation that you found interesting?
Yeah. So I'm just looking at the German title here, which I'll butcher by pronouncing Die Panzernocker gehen auf den Lehm, which means, according to Google Translate, the tank busters are on the hook. So I don't know. You can interpret that how you will, I suppose.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. I don't know if it's got some kind of, specific idiomatic meaning. But that's one of those German titles. It's very satisfying. Yeah, I'm just taking a look at Spain. It's a very straightforward El Caso del Dinero Pegajoso, literal translation. So, all right, let's do it, Jeff.
This Danish one that says, translates, money sticks to certain people, is how it translates according to. So that's sort of...
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting look there, right? I noticed too on Index, there has a listing for Hong Kong.
Ooh.
And I don't remember. I don't recall seeing. It doesn't have, like, I think it was printed in English. I'm just noting it because I never see entries for Hong Kong. So that's kind of
cool. Wow. Yeah. Yes. There's some sort of marginal countries like that. You will very occasionally see things. But yeah, interesting.
All right. So let's do this. We're going to plow in. There's a few things that interest me about this. I'm hoping that I remember to mention them all. But the case of the sticky money has kind of an atypical opening. Barks off and kind of sets the stage by like starting us off in the money bin to signal Scrooge's characterization. But here we have what I'll admit is a pretty delightful opening splash panel.
Agreed.
Great attention getter. We've got Scrooge looking on like aghast at the Beagle Boys, and they're the ones that are signaled as being wealthy. They are just lounging in an over-the-top limousine with two chauffeurs and a couple of men fanning them.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it's very, I mean, it's a very sort of disorienting start to the story. Like, what the heck is this? What's this madness here? And it sort of gets more so as we proceed, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I'm going to note for those people who care about this kind of thing, and I know that there are a few, we got six Beagle Boys in the opening panel. So, you know, the Beagles are just signaling their over-the-top wealth. They're tossing out autograph photos themselves, acting like celebrities. And they're showing off and they're bragging to Scrooge that they're about to become the richest plutocrats in Duckburg. It's all about them bandying their money and their wealth.
Yeah, yeah, as one does.
It's actually a pretty strong start to this story.
I can't decide. So just, sorry, just briefly. So that limousine thing in the first panel, they have like a basket of fruit, is that, on the side of it? Just sitting there for no reason here?
Yeah, it looks like basically a cornucopia, you know, so the Beagles can indulge. Yeah. I've always loved, Jeff, when Barks draws these over-the-top cars.
Yeah, right? Yeah, those are cool.
He does this in a good few. Yeah, it looks like there's even a jug of what might be some kind of hooch or something buried in the back there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. That.
All right. So, you know, Scrooge is disgusted and he tosses down the coin that they offer him to buy himself a soda. He takes a look at his money bin, thinking to himself, it can't be his money that they're stealing. And then he's going to encounter another display, a smaller display of wealth, where his nephews are on the way to the soda shop and offering to buy him a soda.
Yeah, and that's the really sort of kind of disorienting thing when you sort of combine that with the initial stuff with the Beagle Boys, and then there's this, and you sort of assume there's going to be some causal relationship between these things. I mean, they somehow sort of relate to each other, but I mean, they don't really, except insofar as, you know, obviously what the kids are working on sort of intersects with the regular story, but it's sort of, they're not really connected. I mean, the Beagle Boys are rich, the kids have this serum or whatever it is.
I had kind of the same thought as you, that at first it feels like I'm supposed to assume that these are connected to each other, not just that they're going to connect, but as you say, they've discovered something. They've invented a glue with their chemistry set that is, quote, the stickiest stuff you ever saw.
Yeah.
So Jeff, you probably read as many comics as I have from the 1950s and 60s, I'm guessing. I always think about those like chemistry sets that they advertised. Yeah. Doesn't this feel like such a prototypical kid thing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember when I was of small, that era. I never had like a chemistry set. That sounds dangerous, but I was never given one in any case. But it always seemed like, oh man, I want to be able to, like, you know, pour chemicals from beakers and stuff and make a sort of magic sort of invention things. But never panned out somehow.
I think this was probably very relatable back in the 60s, the early 60s here, because I see so many ads in these old comics for these things. So, you know, but Barks might as well have been sponsored by one of these ads or something.
Sure.
I don't actually think he was. It's just that there's a very good synergy between this is the kind of thing kids were interested in and the ads that ran in these comics themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of a kind of like a convenient sort of plot point thing if you need to sort of have something happen. Oh, well, they can have a chemistry set, so they invented something. I mean, I guess it's sort of similar in some ways to like having, you know, Gyro appear there with some helpful, convenient invention here, but...
Right. So anyway, they are celebrating this invention, and the whole way Scrooge is ranting at their profligacy, right? The fact that they're maybe going to be rich, and he's pointing out, you know, that you're already spending your fortune before you even know if your glue will sell. So when they're in the soda shop, he's gonna pull a fun little trick where he's gonna stick some of the glue to their hands, so that they have to hold on to their money. Jeff, can I ask you to kind of just, do you have any thoughts or can you talk about the soda shop itself?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess a soda shop is a typical sort of thing here. And this one particularly, we see all this graffiti on the walls here, which I don't know if these are like Western Publishing in-jokes or something that's going on here. And I really don't know what the sign that says don't be a means there.
I think it's don't be a square.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Yeah. Fair enough.
Right. That clicked for me. It's a fun little, because most signs are rectangular, right? That's a little bit, that's a little jarring, right? Because you're like, oh yeah, this is totally early 60s hep talk. Can you read some of the graffitis? They're funny.
Yeah. Teresa and Mr. In Between, one says, Joe and Carol, Brad and Lil, Slobby and Bobby.
I think it's just Blobby.
Maybe.
So. I like that.
Oh yeah. I think you're right.
It's funny. Yeah, you know, the soda fountain is such a fun bygone thing. I think it was such a, we talk about third places today, right? It's the soda shop was such a great soda hangout. Shop.
Get a tall, cool soda. I mean, that Nine Donald, 5 tall, cool cherry sodas. I mean, that sort of mirrors, I think, what, the second richest duck or whatnot, where he's like running off to get like a tall, cool vanilla, if I remember correct, soda when Scrooge tops him. So something about that phrasing, I guess, is.
I find this whole segment really charming. Mm-hmm. The predictable thing happens when the soda jerk comes out with the 5 sodas for the 5 ducks. The ducks, John, Donald, and the nephews are not able to pay because of course the money is stuck to them. And so, you know, Scrooge has to do the thing he dreads the most. And this is a fun little segment at the end of, I don't know, I've gone to like page 4. Jeff, do you mind telling us about Scrooge paying?
Yeah, so Scrooge, because he's rich, naturally, it sort of stands to reason that the lowest bill he has is 1,000 there. So he has to give that to the soda jerk, I guess we should call him here, who fortunately does have change for a $1,000 bill, a huge handful of singles, I guess, here, because somebody else, I think we can guess who, has been here prior.
So I like that those 3 panels are really, the sequence there is nicely paced. This is a very lightweight, fluffy story, but it still really highlights, I think, some wonderful Barks, like plot progression. So he says, I won't even miss it, King Midas. I had some customers in here today who were real big spenders. It's very, like, it's a very nothing of a event, but it's paced very satisfyingly, and it's gonna it ties so nicely back to what we saw earlier. And then on the next page we have a very like Scrooge McDuck moment, right? Do you want to tell us what advances the story here?
So as it happens, Scrooge is looking at some of the money that he's gotten in change here, and he has a terrifying realization as he looks at it, which is that, oh no, this dollar should be in his money bin because he has all the serial numbers memorized, naturally. So he recognizes this dollar.
That's great, right? Because it is Barks using his characterization to advance this story along. Yeah. Of course, it's very over the top, but of course, Scrooge McDuck memorizes.
Well, I mean, of course, that's going to vary from story to story, whether that's a realistic thing, but
yeah. But it's definitely within like the wheelhouse, and it's, I'm willing to buy it for at least this story to have him stretch the character this way. And then there's a cute little beat where Scrooge realizes, oh, I almost forgot to drink my soda, and the nephews are smacking their lips saying it wasn't wasted on Scrooge. We kids saw that it got drunk. Very cute. So, you know, they go back to the bin and they confirm that, you know, no one could have gotten in. The vault door is still sealed, but yes, in fact, there is a whole swath of bills missing. He even recites the serial numbers from the ones that were where they should have been.
I'm in a lot of mental power, I think, to memorize all these, but, you know, got to do what you got to do.
And we get, I think we're meant to think that it's no effort for him. He once he sees it, needs some kind of photographic memory. Important little plot beat. The kids are trying to wash the glue off their hands. They'll be doing that for a while. And, you know, Scrooge, this is going to kind of veer now into a little bit of a detective story almost, where Scrooge is looking for footprints, fingerprints, seeing nothing. He's pondering how the area below the bin is sowed with landmines. I do like the word sowed for as though they're seeds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they don't have any real leads other than the obvious, what Scrooge saw this morning, the nouveau riche Beagle Boys, who are like, like bandying about all of their wealth. Jeff, every depiction of the Beagle Boys, like tossing money out and having over the top luxurious stuff is kind of my favorite part of this, right?
Sure. Yeah, I kind of agree. It's I don't know if you, this is sort of semi-off, but if you remember the Scarba story, the Lentils from Babylon, the rather incoherent story that was published in Gladstone, and they had Don Rosa do a couple covers for it. And one of them has a sort of very, very similar thing with the Beagle Boys and like a big old car with all the rich guy stuff. So
that always
makes me think of that when I see this here.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think I remember you didn't care for that one, as I recall reading.
Well,
But I actually really liked that story for whatever reason. It's been a while, but I remember really enjoying it.
Yeah, actually, it does have something to be said for itself, but my goodness, it is not easy to follow, or at least I did not find it.
It's the other one. It's the, what is the one with the fish that I just found?
Oh, the Flying Scot.
Yeah, the Flying Scot, yeah. Which is so beloved on by the fans, that I just found totally inscrutable.
But there's just so many pages with like trying to get a fish that's like cut the right way for the bird there. Like it's like 9 or 10 pages of this. It's like, what are we doing here? What's
yeah. All right.
Sorry, people, but
it's okay. Like I like my, you know, I think I like the Mickey stuff. It's
Scarlet. Yeah, definitely. More. I think he definitely in general was stronger with those.
All right. So you know, Scrooge is going to Jacques Hughes, the Beagle Boys, and he's gonna demand that they show him the serial numbers, dare them, in fact. And I love this. The Beagle says, "This ruffian insults us, Ben Ali. Sweep him off our premises." So, you know, their servant there is clearly like Middle Eastern, and he's dressed like, you know, a sultan's banner for whatever reason. I guess that's the ethos they like. Oh, you know what? This thought struck me that made me appreciate this story more than I expected is, and I really like this, right? I've been doing this project. It's my first time engaging with these stories chronologically, right? Because I just read them the way Gladstone or whoever printed them. And what I've noticed is that we've had multiple stories before this and fairly recently of the Beagle Boys, like talking about the goofball things that they would do when they steal his money in stories like Paul Bunyan Machine. And I can't remember what else specifically, but there have been multiple. And this is the story where we kind of get to see those pipe dreams actually play out. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, well, I love that mansion they have there at the bottom of whichever page.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're going to see Scrooge get the law, a cotillion of police officers and lawyers. And when they head to the Beagle Boys hangout, he discovers that a note says that they've moved to our new mansion in Plushwood Oaks. And you want to tell us about that mansion?
Well, it is quite a thing, really. It has like a minaret there, sort of, with like a decorative bird there, seemingly in gold. There's a stag standing there, also in gold. Another couple like eagles or gargoyles or something. There's like sort of columns, like an ancient sort of Roman kind of design here. There's a like statue of a horse there, bucking on a horse rampant, I guess we can say in heraldry terms, on its back legs there. And it's quite a place, I have to say.
Obviously, the Beagles couldn't have built it in this, you know, span of time. But I think the comic book logic is that they're supposed to have commissioned it.
Yeah.
The hilarious thing about it is that it's like this mishmash of, you said Greek, but there's like Middle Eastern clearly. Yeah, yeah. There's like Far Eastern. It's just all these different ideas. I think this is like kind of plucking fun at the nouveau riche, right? The tacky wealth. I also like the funny signaling with the owl lawyers.
Of course they're lawyers, therefore they're owls. What do you want?
And I'm just noticing now their names on each of their not briefcases, but whatever their attaché cases. Scowl, growl, and owl attorneys.
Yeah, I'd hire that law firm definitely.
Scowl, so growl. Like this could, I'll say it, without the Barks artwork, this could really have kind of served as a Tony Strobel story or whoever. But it does still have some writing that is facing, that is clearly Barks and very sharp.
Mm-hmm.
This whole sequence at the mansion is great, right? It consists of Scrooge. I'm not going to say everything that I like, so I'm going to invite you, Jeff, to mention a couple of the things. But on the whole, it is just an opportunity for Barks to show off the funny ways the Beagle Boys are indulging in their wealth. It's got Scrooge investigating the serial numbers of their cash, him not recognizing any of them because in the background they've got like a device that's changing the serial numbers. What do you like about this couple of pages that show off?
What don't I like? Yeah, I mean, definitely seeing the coyotes there and their solid gold coyote kennels. And there, of course, we can't forget the diamond studded cages for the purse snatching falcons, with a fairly cool picture of a falcon there. And then fountain wise, we have this person here who is seemingly a fountain of jewels. And he's sort of, you know, spraying jewels, I guess, into the fountain as you do. So that's pretty fun there.
I love the platinum cages for the rats who used to rob church poor boxes.
Yeah. So what are they doing now? What's going on here? I think putting perfume in the pool like that's a little gross, I have to say.
Right. $10 an ounce perfume.
Oh, well, in that case.
Yeah. So this sequence is great. I think this is probably the funniest and most entertaining part of this story. And I think Barks himself was really entertained doing this. I can tell because the backgrounds are actually like really detailed and well drawn compared to some of the, you know, we know he's kind of slowing down in the 60s, and a lot of his backgrounds have been a lot more Spartan. Like last episode, I noted in Audible Odyssey, they were like very Spartan backgrounds, but this is like very detailed and very, very funny.
Yeah, it looks good.
So, you know, the cops and the law are unable to pin anything on them. Okay, a couple more funny things here. The Beagles, at least one of them, appear to have their prison numbers actually tattooed across their chest, we can see. And then, you know, Barks will do, he pokes fun at a few occupations frequently. We know how he feels about lawyers from some previous stories. I like the one scowl owl or growl telling him to don't answer that question, McDuck. Those Beagle Boys could sue you for libeling their good names. It's just very entertaining. The last invention that they show off is a solid silver nuisance remover, which kicks him out over the fence over a sign that says, and stay out. Excellent stuff. So, you know, they have to like reconnoiter back at Scrooge's bin, and he's less convinced now that they are robbers. I guess the only thing I forgot to mention too is that the Beagles, they allude to also having invented a little something, which is their secret, you know. So, you know, the mystery, the case of the sticky money, it's not going to be that big of a mystery ultimately, but so, you know, they kind of go back to try to mull things over. Donald points out some ventilator holes that will be significant later. And it occurs to Scrooge that when they were at the mansion, the Beagles were showing off a lot of their trained critters. Yeah. So he has honestly what seems like a reasonable supposition. What is he guessing here, Jeff?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I'd call it that reasonable, but his idea that trained bats may have come down to a... taken his money somehow. I guess they can hold a couple coins in their claws or something, and sort of,
you know, for someone who's learned cormorant speech, they've done it before, right? It's at least not too far off. So yeah, bats. He's gonna keep an eye out for bats on the roof that evening. I like his little armory there.
Little spiked club there, a blunderbuss, which he picks up there, cannon, tomahawk, and little flintlock pistol or something, it looks like.
Yeah, a lot of nice archaic stuff. We're going to transition now to the nephews for a little bit. And they're kind of despairing that maybe their invention is not so great because it only sticks things, quote, to ducks and people.
Yeah,
that's an interesting line, right?
It is. Yeah, you definitely notice it.
Because people is obviously meant to include the sort of dog anthropomorphic creatures. And we know he's treated them as people, but the ducks are people. But over the previous hundreds of issues, he's kind of vacillated between calling them ducks and people. And he's just kind of splitting the difference here. Mm-hmm. But they realize it won't stick money to other money, money to wood, etc. I really like the expression of the nephew at the end of this page, his little hangdog, for whatever reason, his disappointed look there.
I also like the rulers in their mouths like that. That's a sort of an odd look there.
Oh, yeah. It's that they're using to try sticking things without sticking something to themselves. Our narrator box says on the next page, night comes, but no bats appear. And we're going to see the mystery solved pretty quickly. Yeah. I will say that the mystery is I'm inevitably a little bit disappointed when comic books set up something called a mystery, right?
Yeah.
Because they almost always don't have enough room to really make it work as a mystery. This is pretty good, right? I don't think, and maybe enough groundwork has been played. If you're going to title something The Case of or The Mystery of, then, maybe I'm saying this because I've been reading a lot of Agatha Christie lately, but a good mystery story really does need a lot of groundwork done.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. And especially, you call it The Case of the Sticky Money. Sort of the whole sticky stuff seems sort of beside the point here. That's not really the mystery when we come down to it. It's just how we solve the mystery. So,
yeah, exactly. I will say there have been a couple of stories that Barks sets up as mysteries where I do think he's successful, even with the kind of limited page length. In a few months, I'll be getting around to The Mystery of the Ghost Town Railroad.
Oh, yeah, that's a great story. I love
that. And yeah, I think that's one of his late career triumphs.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as a satisfying solution, I think it's great. To say nothing of some of the classic Gottfriedson Mickey Mouse.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think those are some of the most satisfying mystery stories I've read just in literature. This one is, it's so. The whole thing is basically the Beagle Boys have developed a sort of mechanized hose that has treads, and it can silently cross the minefield, light as a feather. It has suction cup treads to go up the wall, down the little shafts. It's got a very modern camera inside of it that can kind of scope things out and see where to just suck up the money. I guess, so things that I like about this is that it's really quite plausible. It's generally technology that probably wouldn't be around for a couple of decades, but it's not a magic machine.
Sure. Right? Yeah. So as far as these things go, it's...
And I do like kind of the silent, I guess we get a whole page almost that's where you're just following just it.
Check boxes.
It's pretty cool. It's a little silly that, it goes right behind Scrooge. That tells me that this is, Scrooge doesn't notice it. He's so busy looking for bats. so really, they've been very lucky, essentially.
And
they're doomed to being found out. So, that's what's going to happen, but not for a little while. Scrooge is not going to notice it overnight. He's going to come back to his bin exhausted and see a big gap where a lot of money has been sucked up once again.
I always, when I was a kid, I liked books of with sort of kind of charts, with natural history or not of geology, sort of of the earth or something. Here's a chart of the different layers of the earth, and I sort of almost think of that looking at the way it sort of showed illustrating this hose and everything. I guess that last panel, maybe I'm tricked by that last panel. It's sort of, I don't know what color it is there, but it's brown here. It sort of looks like the hose is going into a hole. It's not. on the roof. I'm not explaining this very well, but it's going onto the roof. It's not going into the roof, and then it's going into the tunnel there. But regardless, it's like visually striking anyway, in a way that maybe you don't see that often, possibly, in Barks.
I agree with you. I think just the way he's drawn this little device is actually pretty engaging. It's pretty cool. It looks both organic and machine-like.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's a neat little device.
Yeah, I want one.
So let's see. It ultimately results in at least 1,000 big C notes being gone.
Yeah.
What would a C note be? Are we talking about is that a $100 bill, like a century note? What is a C note?
And C is 100, isn't it?
It's, right? Like if I'm thinking in Roman numerals or whatever?
C note. Yeah, I think it's just supposed to be a $100 bill here, which seems...
That's what I assumed. I just wanted to make sure.
I do think it's funny. I think I can hear the swish of bat's wings, but I guess they're too far away to be seen.
Yeah, I like that. That is a fun panel with he's got the hose right behind him.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to leave Scrooge for a little bit and find that the nephews have finally gotten the glue off their hands. They can spend their money at the soda shop again. But you want to tell us, Jeff, what do they encounter when they get there?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the soda shop seems to be all full up here of Beagle Boys having their little... party here, their feast here with sodas, some of which have diamonds in them, apparently. I don't know how healthy that is, but, and some of them just sort of mashing themselves into banana splits here. Why not there? One of them seemingly, I don't know, sprinkling seltzer on himself. I can't quite tell there.
Right.
Anyway, they're having fun.
This is a delightful, you know, full spanning panel of four Beagle Boys just in a bacchanalia, right? Like, I think that this story gets more enjoyable if you think of it as a Beagle Boy showcase
than
a Scrooge story, because they are the most entertaining by far in this. And it's just great to see the ways that they're indulging there. So the nephews are realizing that one of them says, I love people who spend money. Those guys are overdoing it. So, you know, they kind of scheme that they need something to make a few of those easy dollars stick to their hands. Yes, sort of like happened to us. So, well, you know,
that seems rude. They don't have any reason, really. I mean, sure, they expect something's up, but they don't have any proof here. They're just going to mess with the Beagle Boys. Well, I guess that's fair. Might as well mess with them for fun.
Right. I mean, I think some of it is the judgment of them being such like gross spendthrifts. But, you know, they know full well where that money has come from.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, they're going to save their money and they're going to instead spend it on some chemicals for more of their glue.
Mm-hmm.
And that evening, you know, Scrooge and Donald are going to scout things in like a better way, right? They're going to use some peepholes to just look inside the bin. Jeff, does this seem a little bit abrupt almost how quickly they do identify the hose and they see what's really happening here?
Yeah, but probably does. I mean, that might be sort of one of the results of the sort of editorial fiat for shorter stories. There's not necessarily as much room as you would need to really sort of, and you were talking earlier about mysteries, enough room to sort of make it seem a little bit more organic there. But yeah, they just look, huh, there's the hose. Solve the mystery. And there we go.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost too easy, right? Like the reader got to see it, but there's no real like savvy, as Scrooge was saying, in figuring this out. And when you call it a case,
they would have gotten it eventually. Clearly, I mean, if that's all it takes, just looking through the peepholes.
Right, exactly. I feel like in an earlier Bark story, there would have been one more night and something else that the Beagle Boys did to make it, you know, to use a little bit more.
Yeah, sort of rule of threes kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Like the Beagle Boys, maybe with their camera, would have seen Scrooge keeping an eye out, and they would have said, ah, but we've got this next step.
Oh,
they'd
push
a button. Sure. And so, you know, I do miss that. But I do like Scrooge's kind of like half-cocked pursuit where, you know, he goes up to see the hose and, you know, they reel in the hose. The nephews get a line on it. The Beagle Boys are forced to cut it away and drive off. And I like what happens to Scrooge here. You want to tell us?
Yeah. So, I mean, sort of in real life, the idea of landmines here would be horrifying, but it's not real life. So here we just see him blam. I forgot about my landmines. Ow! I stepped on another one. It just sort of kind of makes his sort of security precautions look a little bit ludicrous there.
Yeah, I really enjoy all of the landmine jokes that Barks has done over kind of the decades. And I have to say, he got out of the game just in time, right? Because I feel like if he were writing these at the height of the Vietnam War,
that's a good point, yeah,
that they wouldn't hit the same way. And he'd probably have been told, no more landmine jokes. And then by the time like Rosa was back into things into the 80s and picking up with the same kinds of gags, you know, enough time had passed essentially. Yeah. But you can't really do landmine jokes through the 70s.
Landmines are still a problem. Let's be clear about that.
Exactly. I mean, so this next part of the story is entertaining as well, where the Beagle Boys, I like that the idea that's probably been playing in the back of our heads throughout most of the story when we see the Beagles is that they're spending way too much money, right? Like this is, even if you're robbing Scrooge McDuck's fortune, over the top. And that's what they say, you know, they're like, oh, I wish we hadn't spent more money than we'd actually stolen.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of assume that if they had like stolen two batches, and then like spent lavishly, but not absurdly, they probably could have been set for life, right?
Yeah, you'd think. It's
So that's the entertaining part of the Beagle Boys. They can't stop.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're planning to just make their escape with this one batch of big notes that they've just sucked up, which is probably a pretty good haul. But of course, the nephews have indeed seeded it with their glue, and they're getting comically stuck to the wall and to the bills and everything. And Scrooge is despairing that he didn't get the truck's number. But, you know, the good woodchucks are giving him a salute and reassuring that all they need to do is have another look around Plush Wood Oaks.
Yeah, I wonder if there are merit badges in this for them.
Right. Yeah, I can think of like a merit badge for detective work, for chemistry. Do you want to tell us about this last sequence here, Jeff?
So Scrooge pounds on the door with his cane, and then when it opens, the Beagle Boys are sort of all lying in a stack with looking sort of shell-shocked with money all over their hands. I'm not quite sure how that happened, really, but such is the nature of comics, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can imagine them trying to like inch over to help each other and then just getting worse off. I like what they say when he raps on the door. We can't open it, but bust it down and come in. We sure need your help.
Yeah.
So the last page has one of my favorite panels here. Can you guess what I'm thinking of here, Jeff?
Boo hoo hoo. Now I'll be sent back to prison to be rehabilitated again. Boo hoo hoo.
I mean, that panel too is probably in second place, but I just love the top panel. I love that they're just hauling the Beagles off with like a little tractor, and they're loaded up in a cart and they are literally gift wrapped. They've got like a bow. Yeah.
They do. I'm not
the top.
And the cop is driving a tractor, it looks like, carrying them.
Yeah, it's a riot. The cop is saying this method of capturing crooks sure sticks them with the evidence. Yeah, I will say that jokes about people getting stuck to things with glue. the probably the last funny one was done in like 1937 or something. So, but you know, it is kind of expected. And we've got a pretty fitting and a little inversion of the nephews can't buy Scrooge the soda because their fingers are stuck to the money. And that is what's happened to him. He says, it seems I'm having to sort of hang on to my money for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I don't know. I mean, he doesn't seem as sort of necessarily stingy towards the relatives. I mean, when they're sort of talking about who's going to pay for sodas, it's just like, you know, who can pay for them, who does this. I don't know. It seems kind of good natured to me.
Yeah, this kind of iteration of Scrooge is a little less stingy. He's still definitely focused on getting his money back. But, you know, Barks is a little bit stretchy with how he does this. So, you know, that's it. That's the case of the sticky money. Jeff, what are your overall thoughts on the story?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mean, there are a lot of other stories around the same time that I maybe also should go back to reread. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, people talk about, you know, Barks's decline. Obviously, he had some sort of weaker stories from around this time. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe sometimes it's just a matter of inflated expectations or inappropriate expectations. Because I think if you just, you know, look at this story, you just read it, you know, compared to the non-Barks stories, certainly, that were going on at this time. And it's just kind of cool. It's kind of fun. You know, it's not a major statement, but that's okay. It doesn't always have to be that way.
Yeah, like I said, I found it really entertaining. I enjoyed this one a lot more, especially when you consider how little of it I remembered. Mm-hmm. All I remembered was that when I read it originally, you know, a lot of it came back to me, of course. But when I thought about it beforehand, I recalled not thinking very much of it, mm-hmm. right? So by that measure, it was a nice surprise to me.
Sure.
I look at the index rankings for these a lot because it's kind of my shtick to close out the episode, right? And I'll mention here that this is very low rated on index for a Barks story. It gets a 7.2. Currently, it's at number 740. And if you just break out his adventure length stories, it is in the 87th percentile of those. So the bottom 13%. I enjoyed it relative to that ranking, I will say.
Yeah, no, certainly. I don't know. You know, some of the index rankings, I mean, I don't really know necessarily exactly how it works, but I know it's at least partially based on a sort of number of votes there. So
right.
A story like this, I mean, even if it has sort of negative votes compared to other stories, that's probably compared to other Barks stories, really, what people are doing when they rate it, I would guess. So
yeah.
Compared to, you know, a lot of the other stuff, it would be way, way high up there, I think.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's still a top 1,000 story, which, you know, pretty much every Barks story is just about. But I don't know. Like I said, as a showcase for the Beagle Boys, I think it's just delightful. As a mystery story itself, and maybe that's just my expectations mm-hmm. from the title alone, I think it leaves something to be desired, but still very entertaining, very worthwhile.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Jeff, we mentioned a couple of panels that stood out to us. I always like to ask about your favorite panel. Are there any panels that you'd like to reiterate or that we didn't get to mention that you'd like to call out as being especially great?
Well, I mean, I think we're probably mostly on the same page with this. I think the best panels are generally sort of the Beagle Boys being sort of comically opulent here. So you have the opening, then you have, you know, their mansion, you have these pictures of, you know, their animal cages and things. It's those are a lot of fun, I think, no matter what. And it really it's one of these things. I mean, I know there's like all people, you know, argue about, you know, whether you should prioritize the art or the writing or what, but I think you can see here how the art can really elevate the story and sort of make it a lot more entertaining than it would have been if it had been drawn by, you know, Strobel or something. Nothing against Strobel, but nonetheless, I think.
Right. Yeah, you're right on all counts. You know, those are the greatest panels. This is certainly an art showcase compared to the writing. However, it does still have some very strong writing. Sure. I think, you know, like in relative terms, though, the art is certainly better. But boy, just that two pages where he's in their mansion, and you mentioned how entertaining the art is there. It's got great character art. It also has some just very sharp writing. It's very musical, you know, very rhythmic.
Sure, yeah.
So, you know, this one honestly is kind of a little surprise to me how much I enjoyed it. It's probably the, the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Yeah,
is that the expression?
It is, yes.
but I really did have fun with it. So yeah, I look forward to if you get around to doing an entry. Yeah. And I encourage people to check out your Duck Comics review. It's a great, very entertaining website. right.
Thank you. Yeah, that's how I became rich and famous.
That's right. Now that I'm swimming in this voluntary podcast money. So next episode is going to cover For Old Dime's Sake. So that's a great magic story. That should be something to look forward to. And people can follow Bark's Remarks. I'm really trying to get back to my Facebook updates and my occasional Instagram ones. They are a little bit less frequent, but keep an eye out. So thank you so much, Jeff. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely. I'll be happy to come back one of these days if you have something else. So yeah.
Oh, for sure. The door is always open.